Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Prabhu, since this is a prose verse, is it better, what should I do? Just read the word for word? Okay. Evan. Thus. Chandrama. The moon. Arka. Gabastibya. From the rays of the sunshine. Uparishtat, above. Laksha, yojanataha, by a measurement of 100,000 yojanas. Upalabhyamanaha, being situated, arkasya, of the sun globe, samvatsara, buktim, the passage of 1 year of enjoyment, pakshavyam, by 2 fortnights, Masa Buktim, the passage of 1 month. Sapada Rikshabhyam, by 2.25 days. Dinena, by a day. Eva, only. Paksha, buktim, the passage of a fortnight. Agrachari, moving impetuously. Druta, tara, gamanaha, passing more speedily. Bunkte, passes through. Translation. Above the rays of the sunshine by a distance of 100,000 yojanas, or 800,000 miles, is the moon, which travels at a speed faster than that of the sun. In 2 lunar fortnights, the moon travels through the equivalent of a samvatsara of the sun. In 2.25 days, it passes through a month of the sun. And in 1 day, it passes through a fortnight of the sun. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When we take into account that the moon is 100,000 yojanas, or 800,000 miles, above the rays of the sunshine, it is very surprising that the modern excursions to the moon could be possible. Since the moon is so distant, how space vehicles could go there is a doubtful mystery. Modern scientific calculations are subject to one change after another, and therefore they are uncertain. We have to accept the calculations of the Vedic literature. These Vedic calculations are steady. The astronomical calculations made long ago and recorded in the Vedic literature are correct even now. Whether the Vedic calculations or modern ones are better may remain a mystery for others, but as far as we are concerned, we accept the Vedic calculations to be correct. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshulam Militam Yenam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Didati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatan Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Taruvyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Sri Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So I'll read the translation again. Above the rays of the sunshine by a distance of 100,000 yojanas, 800,000 miles, is the moon, which travels at a speed faster than that of the sun. In two lunar fortnights, the moon travels through the equivalent of a samvatsara of the sun. In 2.25 days, it passes through a month of the sun, and in one day, it passes through a fortnight of the sun. Hare Krishna. This is actually my first time giving the Bhagavatam class here at the Krishna Balaram Mandir. Previously, when the management has asked me to do this, I've always refused, because I feel myself very unqualified for this service. I hope the devotees will all be liberal and tolerant with me today. So somehow by Krishna's arrangement, the one day where somehow I was induced to give this class, I think I got maybe one of the most difficult, technical, and controversial verses and purports of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. Isn't that amazing? The points which Prabhupada has expressed in this purport were controversial even in Srila Prabhupada's time. We were just discussing last night, Srila Prabhupada wrote the book Easy Journey to Other Planets. And in that book, he mentioned a similar point. Prabhupada says here how space vehicles could go to the moon is a doubtful mystery. In 1969, the Americans said that they went to the moon. And Prabhupada doubted it. He doubted it very strongly. I reread many of the conversations where Prabhupada discussed this yesterday, and he doubted it very strongly. So when he wrote that book, Easy Journey to Other Planets, and he mentioned that they didn't go to the moon, or they couldn't go to the moon, a point like that, the editor took it out of the book, because, and Prabhupada was angry about it. How could you take that out of the book? And the editor said, well, then when they went to the moon, I thought, you know, I have to take this part out. Prabhupada said, no. So this point has been controversial since the beginning of the Hare Krishna movement, and maybe it's been controversial ever since. Even I read that several devotees lost their faith in Krishna consciousness on this point. And I don't want to say the name, but now in Mayapur they're building the temple of the Vedic planetarium, and the Bhagavatam cosmology, Prabhupada's idea was to put the cosmology of the Bhagavatam in the forefront of that temple as a challenge to modern astronomy and cosmology. And one of the devotees, we won't say the name, but what I heard and read is that one of the devotees who's very famous and who's very largely involved in that project right now, when he heard Prabhupada's statements that they didn't go to the moon, he lost his faith in Krishna consciousness and he had left for some time. So just see. So I really can't pretend to be an expert on this difficult and technical subject. I can't pretend to really understand what's being described in turn. The Bhagavatam is describing the planets according to different heights, and starting with the sun, going on to the moon, and then others. Venus, Mars, Saturn, Jupiter. I don't remember the order exactly. So we're hoping that when the temple of the Vedic planetarium is completed, these things may be better illuminated for the general class of devotees. Even I read a conversation on this point with His Holiness, Prabhupada is discussing with His Holiness Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, who was one of Prabhupada's most important scientists, who Prabhupada glorified and appreciated like anything, and who was heavily involved in the Bhaktivedanta Institute for promoting a spiritual alternative to modern science based on Bhagavatam. And there's a conversation, even His Holiness Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj is expressing that he finds this point very difficult to understand. So what to speak of me? Above the moon, are some stars. Above these stars is Venus. Above them is Mercury. Above them is Mars. Above that, Jupiter, then Saturn. So like that, the Bhagavatam is describing this way. And Prabhupada has expressed, how could they go to the moon? It's a doubtful mystery, because according to the Bhagavatam, the argument that he generally uses is the same point that he's mentioned here, that the sun is at one height, the moon is at another. And so how could they go there in just a few days? So anyway, I don't want to take a fanatic position on this. I can't insist, you know, that we didn't go to the moon, but I can say it's a doubtful mystery, and it's still a doubtful mystery. Yesterday I was looking, I just wanted to hear, what do the materialists say? What do the modern scientists say about the moon landing? Let's learn about that. And so I searched on the internet, you know, moon landing, and practically 90% of what was coming was, the moon landing was a hoax, it was a conspiracy. So Prabhupada's not the only one to have said this. And there may be several, other points that can be said. Even now they'll say that, you know, they have a space station and they're going out into space. But even now, we recently heard some NASA scientists say, actually now we don't have the technology to go more than 400 miles away from the Earth. And there's different points that have been brought out in, you know, about the moon landing. One is that the scientists say that there's heavy layers of radiation beyond about 400 miles away from the Earth. How to pass through that radiation? It's not such an easy thing. There's different points about the pictures may not look so correct. So, and the main point was expressed very nicely in an article by His Holiness Jayadwaita Maharaj. The main point is, it's now 2015. Everybody's walking around with a smartphone with a high-speed internet connection on it. It's almost 50 years later. Why haven't we gone back? Does anybody ever... Why haven't we gone to the moon? Jayadwaita Maharaj says like this. He says, this is an article written in 1997, which is now it's 18 years ago. And he's saying that the scientists at that time were talking about going to Mars. That was the next big thing. They said, forget the moon, Mars is now the place to go. So Jayadwaita Maharaj writes, I have a question, what happened to the moon? When I was a kid, back in the 60s, the place to go was the moon. The story was, we're exploring, we're questioning, we're on our way to answering age-old questions about life and the universe. So we spent billions of dollars, sent some guys up there, and brought back some rocks. Great, but why aren't we going back? The way America's space wizards used to tell it, by the year 2000, the moon was going to be a regular tourist stop. We'd have our colonies there. Russians and Americans would be finding peace and friendship on the moon. The moon! They promised us the moon. But now, nearly three decades later, and now nearly five decades later, the moon is passé. No colonies, no busy little camps of scientists up there. Jai Sri Sri Krishna Balaram Sri Radhesham Sri Sri Gornitai Ki Jai. No prospecting for minerals, no military installations, no moonshots, no nothing. Instead, hi-ho, it's off to Mars we go. There's one person who wouldn't be surprised, and that's Srila Prabhupada, the spiritual master who brought us the Hare Krishna movement. In the days when the whole earth was watching man's first steps on the moon, Srila Prabhupada said it was bunk. According to the Vedas, Srila Prabhupada said, the moon isn't such an easy place to land. The moon, say the Vedas, is Chandraloka, a heavenly planet, and it's not cold and desolate. It's full of life. It's an abode of pious souls born there as a reward for the noble deeds of former lives. And those pious souls on the moon aren't keen on receiving tourists, especially not low-minded, beer-drinking, meat-eating Americans on a mission to conquer space. Even to get into America, Srila Prabhupada said, you need a visa. Try to bust your way in, and you're up against the American government. So then why should the moon be so easy? So anyway, so there's different ideas given by Prabhupada. Maybe we didn't go. Maybe we went somewhere else. Sometimes devotees said maybe they went to the planet Rahu. Prabhupada, yes, maybe. Or it may be that as human beings with our limited faculty for perception, maybe they went there, but what could they experience there? According to them, they just experienced rocks and sand. One point that came out, very interesting point. Everybody sees the moon is very brilliant and illuminating. It emits an effulgence and lights up the night. If you look at on this Earth planet, we have the Sahara Desert in Africa, which is also a huge desert. When the sun is reflecting off that desert, it doesn't give the same brilliance and illumination. Why? Why? Another question that makes it a doubtful mystery. So, or also we can understand our eyes can only see so many things. If it's too dark, like if you're in a dark room, you can't see what's there. If it's too light, like if you look into a bright light or look into the sun, you can't do that. There's only so many things that you can hear by your ears. Like, you know, they have those things, dog whistles. So if you blow a dog whistle, the dogs will be very disturbed, but human beings can't even hear it. So like Jayadvaita Maharaj is mentioning, in the Vedic understanding, the moon is a place for pious residents. We may not have the faculty to perceive the reality that exists there. Like that. So these are a few points. And then I think... Srila Prabhupada says, as far as we are concerned, we accept the Vedic calculations to be correct. So ultimately, it's an issue about whose authority do you want to accept. You can accept the Vedic authority, or you can doubt the Vedic authority, and by doubting the Vedic authority, implicitly postulating yourself as the highest authority. No, the Vedas don't know. I know better than that. Here's some points from Srila Prabhupada. Actually, we're going to speak a little bit about Baladev Vidyabhushan and Gangamata Goswamini. It's the disappearance day of Baladev Vidyabhushan, the appearance day of Gangamata Goswamini. There's some nice philosophical points from Baladev Vidyabhushan where he expresses this same point on accepting the authority of Vedic knowledge and the wisdom of accepting that authority. But here's a nice, very simple, nice comment from Srila Prabhupada. A doctor asked Prabhupada, this is from the book, The Hare Krishna Challenge. Can you scientifically prove that the soul exists? I mean, is it purely a matter of belief? Srila Prabhupada said, no, it is a scientific fact. Our science is perfect because we are receiving knowledge from the perfect source, Krishna. And modern so-called knowledge is imperfect because the scientist's knowledge is received from imperfect sources. However great a scientist you may be, you have to admit that your senses are imperfect. Doctor says yes. So imperfect senses can give only imperfect knowledge. What you are calling scientific knowledge is bogus, because the men who have produced that knowledge are imperfect. How can you expect perfect knowledge from an imperfect person? The doctor says, it's a question of degree. Prabhupada, my point is that if you are unable to give perfect knowledge, what is the use of taking knowledge from you? Doctor, yes, I accept that view. But how do you prove that the soul exists? Prabhupada, you take information from the perfect source, Krishna, or from Krishna's representative who repeats the words of Krishna. That is our process of proof. Evam parampara praptam, transcendental knowledge must be received in disciplic succession. We don't accept knowledge from a rascal. We accept knowledge from Krishna, the Supreme. I may be a rascal, but because I am receiving knowledge from the perfect source and repeating that, whatever I say is perfect. And from another conversation, a disciple challenges Prabhupada, why do you call Krishna consciousness a science? It seems like it's only a belief. Prabhupada says, your so-called science is also belief. If you call your way science, then our way is also science. Disciple, but with our science, we can prove our beliefs. Prabhupada, then prove that chemicals make life. Your belief is that life is made from chemicals, so prove it, then it is science. But you cannot prove it, therefore it remains a belief. This is one of Prabhupada's great challenges to the material scientists. Life comes from life. He made this bold challenge also in the 70s. And still in 2015, you can boldly challenge with all the same Prabhupada's arguments. They're still as strong as they were. I recently, I watched a debate between materialist scientists on the origin of life, and they were discussing this point. And there was one very confident materialistic scientist who said, yes, we can understand the origin of life. We're very close to being able to create life in a laboratory. I predict that within the next 5 to 10 years, we will be able to do this. And then there was another person in this, another scientist in this debate who was less materialistic and less persuaded by this point. And he said back, yes, I've been hearing this argument that you're just about to create life for in the next 10 years for the last 50 years. So life comes from life. So material science, it may have its utility, and it may be wonderful and useful in certain ways, maybe especially for creating technology and so on. But for ascertaining questions about origins, where does the universe come from? Where does life come from? Even where does the diversity of life or of species on this world, where does it come from? Where does consciousness come from? Where does reason, intelligence, where do these things come from? On these points, material scientists tends to be highly speculative. That was another point of Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj when they're discussing about the moon and the planets. He said, actually, among the scientists, or among the sciences, the science of astronomy tends to be highly speculative. His Grace Vyasaki Prabhu recently published a book discussing and challenging modern cosmological theories, for example, like theories like the Big Bang Theory and other ideas in cosmology. And actually, you should see that book if you're interested in these topics. His challenges are very strong. And his points expose really how highly speculative, although it comes with so much authority and clout, they try to, you know, kind of use the authority of science. Look, the scientists have created the jet airplanes and the iPhone and, you know, so many wonderful gadgets and utilities to make our life so comfortable. So you should, everyone should, you know, kind of surrender to us and accept our authority. But when it comes to origins questions, where does everything come from? What is the ultimate cause of reality? On these questions, it's highly speculative. And they can be challenged on these things. And it's nice if devotees learn a little bit how to challenge these points. Prabhupada was very powerfully challenging these things. With the Vedic Planetarium, we hope to make a very nice and very strong challenge. Okay, so maybe we'll discuss a little bit Baladev Vidyabhushan. We can start by saying not too much is known about the biography of Baladev Vidyabhushan because he was a very humble Vaishnav and he didn't reveal very much about personal details of his life, like where he was born and his family and these kinds of things. A few things that we do know is that he appeared in the 1600s near Ramuna in Orissa. In his youth, he was a very brilliant scholar and mastered Sanskrit grammar, poetry, and logic. After carefully studying the commentaries of Shankar and Madhva, he took initiation in the Tattvavadi disciplic succession of Sripad Madhvacharya and became a Digvijay pundit, a conqueror of all opponents. How nice is the old Indian culture. Now, the sport is to compete in football or something more frivolous. In the old Indian culture, to really be a man, they would compete by arguing philosophy. Like in the Gaura Lila, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu defeated the Digvijay Pundit because that was their sport. The Digvijay Pundit was coming to, you know, establish his superiority, and young Nimai Pundit defeated him. So Baladev Vidyabhushan, he was also a Digvijay Pundit, someone who conquered all kinds of scholars in many directions. Wherever he went, he defeated the local sages, scholars, and sannyasis. In Jagannath Puri, he learned the super excellent philosophy of Sri Krishna Chaitanya from Sri Radha Damodar Goswami, who was, one place I read, he was a grand disciple of Shamananda Pandit. And in Vrindavan, he studied Srimad Bhagavatam under Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and worshipped the deity Radhasham Sundar. In 1706, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur sent him to Guta near Jaipur in Rajasthan to uphold the credibility of Mahaprabhu's movement. And this is the most famous story. What we understand there is that the king was responsible for upkeeping the worship of Radha Govinda in Jaipur, and the Gaudiya Vaishnavas were doing the worship. And some local pundits from the Ramanuja Sampradaya, their emphasis was more Vaidhi Bhakti and Varnashram Dharma. And so they had few doubts about the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Who are these Gaudiya Vaishnavas? Why are they keeping Radharani next to Govindaji? She's not even married to Krishna. What is that? That may be, for a mundane moralist, that's a very difficult thing to appreciate. And these followers of Ramanujacharya, they valued the Varnashram very prominently. And what is their sampradaya? We all know that there's four Vaishnav sampradayas. And without being connected to one of those sampradayas, it says, then their mantra will have no effect. So what sampradaya are they connected to? And they have no commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. And to be kind of a credible sampradaya, one needs this type of commentary. So the king, being a responsible king, he needed to resolve this. You know, we can't have, it's just like us, we don't want our deities to be worshipped by unbonafide people. And so they called Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur to try to resolve this difference. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, some will say he was too old at that time. Others will say he had taken Kshetra Sannyas, so he couldn't leave Vrindavan. So he sent the brilliant disciple of Baladev Vidyabhushan. Baladev Vidyabhushan went there together with another prominent disciple of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and defeated all of them. He quoted many Puranas, Vedas, Upanishads, and the Srimad Bhagavatam, proving that Srimati Radharani and Lord Krishna are always together. Radharani is Krishna's potency of power. They cannot be separated. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan quoted a story from Srila Jayadev Goswami's Gita Govinda that showed how Radharani was married to Krishna. And he quoted in the Brahmavimohan Leela, Lord Brahma, because he was thinking too much in terms of Aishwarya Gyan, could not appreciate that Krishna could be God, and stole all the cowherd boys. And so we know the story. Krishna expanded himself in such a way that he exactly replicated all of his cowherd boyfriends, and also all the calves that they were tending. And so for 1 year, the residents of Vrindavan, although externally it looked like they were associating with their sons or the cows with their calves, they were actually associating directly with Krishna. And at that time, during that same year, must have been some auspicious occasion in the stars or something. And so it was advised that this is a very auspicious time. All of the Brijvasi men should give away their daughters in marriage to the Brijvasi cowherd boys. So all of the boys and girls were married at that time, including Radharani, and including Radharani's gopi friends. And so although Radharani is externally married to Abhimanyu, and the other gopis may have other husbands, but actually at that time they were married to Krishna. So that point was there. There's also this verse from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, because they can challenge, where is Radharani even mentioned in the Bhagavatam? But there is a verse, Ananya Radito Nunam Bhagavan Harir Ishvaraha. Certainly this particular gopi has perfectly worshipped the all-powerful personality of Godhead Govinda, since he was so pleased with her that he abandoned the rest of us and brought her to a secluded place. That's from the Gopi Geet. And then even the name Radharani is there in the verse in a hidden way. Ananya Radito. So Baladeva Vijayabhushan, he quoted so many of these types of verses and arguments, and he proved that Radharani is Krishna's own power, and that for them there's even no need to marry. And eventually the followers of Ramanujacharya accepted these arguments. Baladeva Vijayabhushan is also responsible for proving that the Gaudiya Vaishnavas are in the line of Madhvacharya. Sri Lakshmipati Tirtha, who gave diksha to Sri Nityananda Prabhu, was a disciple of Madhvacharya. And Madhavendra Puri, the grand spiritual master of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was also a disciple of this Lakshmipati Tirtha. So somehow this very crucial point was also proved. They challenged, but the one has the name Tirtha, Lakshmipati Tirtha, and the other has the name Puri, Madhavendra Puri. So how can it be said that they're connected by initiation? Baladeva Vijayabhushan also defeated this point. He said, you can't just go by the sannyas initiation. Like in the case of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was given initiation by Ishvara Puri, and sannyas by Keshav Bharati, but Ishvara Puri was considered his spiritual master. And then, of course, he wrote his commentary on the Govinda Bhasya, or his Govinda Bhasya commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. And that was, he was a brilliant scholar that was full of all the essential truths of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And anyway, by these ways, he satisfied these challenges. Even our Srila Prabhupada has dedicated his Bhagavad Gita as it is to Baladeva Vijayabhushan, who's written such a beautiful commentary on the Vedanta Sutra. One more point I thought to read is that Baladeva Vijayabhushan has, one of his works is called the Prameya Ratnavali, and it's a collection of essential conclusions, essential spiritual conclusions, which are favorable and important to devotional service. So one verse, he summarizes all these conclusions. He says that our philosophy can be summarized in the following way. One, Lord Hari is the absolute truth, and nothing is greater than He. Two, the material world is real. Three, the jivas, the living entities, are different from Lord Hari. The jivas are by nature Lord Hari's servants. The jivas are situated in varying positions, both in the material and spiritual worlds. Liberation does not mean an impersonal merging, but the experience of the bliss of devotional service. Pure devotional service grants liberation. And then finally, direct perception, logic, and Vedic revelation are the three sources of knowledge, and Lord Hari is revealed in the Vedic scriptures. So he's made the same point that Srila Prabhupada has made in the purport, that ultimately, when it comes to the most important truths, for some relative knowledge, sense perception, logic and argumentation, it may be very, very good and very favorable. But when it comes to determining the most important questions of life, what is the cause of all causes? Who am I? What is God? What is the soul? What's the goal of our life? These types of questions, especially, it's important to take help from higher authority. Baladev Vidyabhushan writes, direct perception and logic are actual sources of knowledge when they confirm the authoritative statements found in Vedic revelation. Only foolish persons, bewildered by the illusory material energy of the Lord, accept the misleading evidence of direct sensory perception. Logic and mental speculation are inconclusive and unreliable sources of knowledge. They may be compared to the forest fire on top of a hill, which has just been extinguished by showers of rain and thus yields no light, but only a great quantity of smoke. That's the position of the materialistic scientist. A lot of smoke. Intelligent persons do not therefore consider logic and sense perception to be independent and infallible sources of knowledge, but rather they are dependent assistants to the principal source of knowledge, the Vedic revelation. Like Srila Prabhupada was saying, in our science, we accept the perfect authority. Krishna. So very quickly and very briefly, we'll just say a few things about Gangamata Goswamini. From her childhood, Princess Sachi Devi, the daughter of King Naresh Narayan of Bengal, showed unalloyed devotion to Lord Krishna. She even refused to marry on account of her genuine attachment to Krishna. After her father's demise, she ruled the kingdom, but she soon renounced it to find a bona fide spiritual master. Princess Sachi Devi met Sri Haridas Pandit, a leading guru in Vrindavan, and began performing devout bhajan to Govindaji. Although she became frail from under-eating, she would always sleep on the Yamuna's sandy bank, Haribol, and rise before sunrise to clean Govindaji's temple. Daily she would hear Bhagavad Katha, see Govindaji's artik, circumambulate Radha Shama Sundar's Leelastans, such as Vamsivat, Sevakunj, Niduvan, and Rasastali. Receiving encouragement from Sri Haridas Pandit, Sachi Devi completely dropped her false ego, put on rags, and went house to house in Braj begging alms. The Brajbasis were astonished by her severe renunciation. Taking her guru's suggestion, she went to Radha Kund to associate with Sri Lakshmi Priya Devi Dasi, a dear disciple of Sri Haridas. Following Thakur Haridas's perfect example, Lakshmi Priya Devi chanted 3 lakh names of Hare Krishna mantra every day. Every day the two ladies would circumambulate Govardhan Hill and worship Krishna. On her guru's order, Sachi Devi went to the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya in Jagannath Puri. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and most of Lord Gauranga Sundar's eternal associates had already returned to Goloka Vrindavan. Sachi Devi restored Sarvabhauma's house and established first-class worship of Sri Sham Roy, a deity given to her by a Jaipur Brahmin. Every day she lectured on Srimad Bhagavatam. Her classes became popular, attracting eager listeners from miles around. Many people, including Brahmins and King Mukundadev, took initiation from Sachi Devi. There's also a note how Sachi Devi got the name Gangamata. On the day of Ganga Sagar Mela, Sachi Devi, who was residing in Jagannath Puri, desired to bathe in the Ganga. That night, the Ganga flowed from the lotus feet of Lord Jagannath and came to Sachi's ashram. Entering Ganga Devi's waters, Sachi floated to the lotus feet of Jagannath Swami inside the temple. Did you follow that? So the Ganga flowed from the lotus feet of Lord Jagannath into the place. If you've ever been to Puri and you've seen the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he was in a great location. It was just like a 3-minute walk from, or it is still, just like a 3-minute walk from the Jagannath Mandir. So the Ganga flowed from the deity of Jagannath and flooded her ashram where she was staying at the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And from that flood, Sachi managed to float inside the Jagannath temple. After unlocking the doors the next morning, the pujaris were surprised to find her inside the temple. Thinking she was a thief, they immediately put Sachi Devi in jail. Seeing this mistake, Lord Jagannath appeared simultaneously in a dream to both the Puri king and the head pujari. The Lord ordered them to release Sachi Devi Dasi and take initiation from her. From then on, she became famous as Gangamata Goswamini. So I think we'll leave it there. Sri Baladev Vidyabhushan Ki Jai. Sri Gangamata Goswamini Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi. Are there any comments or questions? If we have time, maybe one comment. Okay, then we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.